This conference will now be recorded.
Good afternoon and welcome to the third installment of the 2015-2016 Coast Ida Continuing Education Series sponsored by Capital One. My name is Clark Tuescher. I'm the Sports Information Director at North Central College and a co-chair for the Coast Ida Continuing Education Committee. I'll be moderating today's call as we'll be discussing rule changes for men's and women's basketball that will be taking effect at NCAA institutions this season. Later this afternoon, we will have full audio of today's call, as well as the transcript of the Cover It Live blog and a full fast script from Coast Ida's official transcript provider, ASAP Sports, available for on-demand use at coastida.com. Listeners on today's call can follow along on the Cover It Live blog and ask questions, and we'll address as many of them as we can as we go. Questions can also be submitted to via email to Coast Ida's Director of External Affairs, Barb Kowal, at barbkowal at coastida.com or on Twitter at Coastida News. On the announcement page regarding today's call on coastida.com, there are a series of documents in PDF format available for download outlining the changes in rules and policies for both the men's and the women's games. These will be valuable pieces of information to have as we prepare to begin a new season with many of our teams opening practice today. We have four presenters on today's call. The first of which is John Levinson. John is the NCAA's Secretary Rules Editor for Women's Basketball and a member of the NCAA Women's Basketball Rules Committee. He'll be helping us understand the rule changes and points of emphasis for officials taking place this season. John?
Thank you. Very happy to be here. I would like to draw everybody's attention back to those documents. All the information that was provided in the email has also been provided to conference offices, to the coaching staff, and to the officials to help break down the new rules. You're all aware that we're playing, that the women are going to be playing four 10-minute periods, that there will be less media timeouts in the game this year. There'll be seven media timeouts in a game that's using the media timeout format. There's one media timeout in each of the four periods. That timeout occurs at the first dead ball at or below 5 minutes. If a team calls a timeout above that mark in the first half, in the first period or second period, it will become the media timeout. A team that calls timeout with 9 minutes to go in the first period, the timeout's charged to the team and it becomes the media timeout for the first period. Means the next 9 minutes will be played without a media timeout. That same procedure works in the second period. When we get to the second half, the first team call timeout becomes a media timeout, whether it's taken in the third or fourth period. The first team call timeout in the second half goes to media. So if a team calls timeout with 9 minutes to play in the third period, that goes to media. You'll still have a 5 minute media. That will occur either at the first clock stoppage at or below 5 minutes, or if a team were to call a timeout before that mark, that would become the media timeout. So in the first period, there's only one media. In the second, there's one. In the third, there could be two if a team calls timeout. If no one calls a timeout in the third period, then there's only one media timeout. If the first second half timeout's called in the fourth period, that will go to media and you'll still have the 5 minute media timeout in the fourth period. So one in the first, one in the second. There could be two in the third. If there are two in the third, there can only be one in the fourth. And if there's one in the third, there could be two in the fourth. If no one calls timeout in the second half, then there's only one in the third, one in the fourth. And that's the loss. The floating media timeout will not occur. Additionally, in terms of rule changes, team timeouts have been reduced. A team in a media game gets four timeouts, three 30s, and one full, and the full is 60 seconds in length. If a team does not call any timeout in the first period, in the first half, they will lose one of their 30s. If a team calls any timeout in the first half, they will carry whatever they have left over to the second half. In a game that's not using media timeouts, teams will have five timeouts, three 30s, and two fulls. Now, a full timeout last year in a non-media game was 75 seconds in length. This year, it is only 60 seconds in length. If a team does not call a timeout in the first half, they will lose a 30. If they call anything in the first half, they will carry everything they have left over to the second half. And this is an attempt to get at pace of play and flow of game to have less stoppages during the course of the game. Possibly the most exciting rule change involves the option to advance the ball in the last 59.9 seconds of the game. So we're only talking the fourth period or any overtime period. When the team that either has the ball they have a throw in their backcourt after, let's say they've been scored upon and they call timeout, or if they secure a rebound and they don't dribble or pass the ball before they ask for a timeout, or they steal the ball and before any pass or dribble they call timeout, that team has the option to advance the throw-in spot to the 28-foot line in the front court on the table side. So the throw-in would then be executed right by the coach of the team that's going to be throwing the ball in. It only works when that team calls timeout. If my team were to score and my team called timeout, my opponent could not use the option unless they called a timeout after I call timeout. There is no more one-on-one in women's basketball. On the fifth foul in each period, the offended team with every foul starting with the fifth team will shoot two free throws. So there is no more one-on-one. At the end of the first period, the foul count will reset to zero, and that will happen for the second period, the third period. With the fourth period, overtimes are considered an extension of the fourth period. So a team that's in the bonus at the end of regulation will stay in the bonus for every overtime period that is played. There's been a modification to the 10-second backcourt rule that a team, when there is a stoppage and the team did not gain front court status, when there's a stoppage, that team will get a new 10 seconds, except if the defense knocks the ball out of bounds while they're still in their backcourt, or if there is a held ball and the possession arrow stays with the team that had the ball, or if the team that was in control in their backcourt is assessed a technical foul. In those three situations, a team will not get a new 10 seconds. So if there was 23 seconds on the shot clock when the defense knocks the ball out of bounds, the team will only have 3 seconds to advance the ball into their front court. A timeout taken by the team that had control in their backcourt, even after one of these three circumstances, if a team calls timeout, they will get a new 10. And that's going to become a tactical decision for that coach, because the coach will have one less timeout during the course of the game. The only other rule change that really affects the teams more so is the fact that when a player fouls out, they will have 5 less seconds to replace a disqualified player. They will only have 15 seconds to replace a player who is fouled out. So once the coach and the player have been notified that the player committed her fifth foul, the official will ask the timer to start the 15-second clock. The timer will immediately hit the warning horn. If the substitute for the disqualified player reports prior to the second horn that ends that 15-second time period, play will resume right away. If the substitute does not report before the final horn, a direct technical foul is assessed to the head coach. In terms of game administration, music, bands may play during any dead ball or amplified music that comes from either the scorer's table, or, you know, the table may be set up across the playing court from the scorer's table. But music, whether it's a sound effect or actual music, may be played during any dead ball. And the amplified music and band policy guideline sheet that I produced, that was one of the links on the email, explains exactly what a dead ball is and what a live ball is. The status of the clock running or not running has nothing to do with the ball being live or not. So after a made free throw, for example, once the ball passes through the basket, if a drummer wants to hit the drum or hit a cymbal or make some sound effect, they certainly can do that. If an official calls a foul, so long as a try is not in flight, once they call the foul and blow the whistle, the ball is dead, and bands can immediately play, or music from a computer or iPod that's set up, you know, at a courtside table may play. This does not change the rule with regard to thunder sticks or you know, horns or cowbells or anything that may be in the possession of spectators. They may only use those devices during timeouts and intermissions. Cheerleaders can certainly use a megaphone to yell through at any time during the game, but they can't bang them on the floor unless play is stopped for a timeout or an intermission. Those are the major rule changes that the Rules Committee adopted for the upcoming season. In terms of areas of concern, officials are being asked to enforce the rules as written in the rule book. They are also being asked to focus on physicality in the post, freedom of movement of the players, that players are supposed to be able to move freely within the rules, and players who are trying to prevent their opponent from moving freely may do so, but they must do so legally. Defensive contact on the ball handler and likewise illegal contact by a ball handler on the opponent is another area of concern. What it means to legally guard a player and the restricted area and the lower defensive box under the baskets are still an area of concern. And the last one, but certainly not least, is bench decorum and sportsmanship. That the concern from not only the NCAA office, but from the WCBO Board of Managers was that players are being held to a higher standard than coaches are. And all the officiating coordinators have been asked by the national coordinator and by the Rules Committee to penalize egregious conduct by coaches and other bench personnel, and not to ignore any of that behavior.
Okay,
that pretty much covers everything.
John, we have a question that's come in on the Cover It Live blog. Will teams be switching baskets at the end of each quarter, or will they remain at the same basket until halftime?
That part of the rule didn't change, so teams will be shooting at the basket furthest from their bench during the first half, so for the first two periods, and then at the start of the second half, start of the third period, they will shoot at the basket closest to their bench, and they will shoot at that basket for the remainder of the game.
Okay. We have some other questions that have come in. If there is a shooting foul at the end of the first period, will the free throws be taken at the start of the second period?
If the foul was a personal foul, it's considered to be part of the, if time had not clearly expired and the ball was still live, like if there was a shot, even if the horn expires, if a try is in flight, the ball's still live. If a foul were to occur then, those free throws would be shot as part of the first period. But if the ball was clearly dead at the end of the first period, the foul would be a technical foul, and those free throws would be attempted at the start of the second period.
Okay. We've had a request for clarification regarding media timeouts. If a team calls a timeout 30 seconds into the first quarter, that becomes the media timeout. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
And that is different from the men.
Okay. That's correct. That's important to note that that's a women's rule only. To advance the ball to half court in the final minute, does a coach have to request that after calling timeout, or is it automatic as part of the timeout?
It is not automatic, and the mechanic that the officials will be using when the coach requests the timeout, officials have always asked the coaches what type of timeout you want. Do you want a 30 or do you want a full? The officials will also be asking the head coach if they wish to exercise their option to advance the ball. So if the coach has until the official reporting that timeout to the scorer at the table. So the coach, if I were the official and I asked the coach and the coach says, I don't want to advance it, and I take four steps and they say, you know what, now I want to. They can do that. But once I tell the scorer, you know, white coach, 30-second timeout, start the clock. Once I've done that, the coach can't change their mind. And at that point, if the coach has told me that they wanted to exercise the option to advance the ball, I would then let the scorer know and I would let the opposing coach and my partners know that the coach is exercising the option. And if it's okay, I want to kind of backtrack to that again. If, for example, we're in the last 59.9 seconds of the game and I secure a defensive rebound, if I were to dribble the ball or pass the ball, if my team calls timeout, my team does not have the option to advance the ball. But if I've dribbled it or I've passed it and we are still in our backcourt, if the defense commits a violation, like knocking the ball out of bounds, for example, or committing a kickball violation, or they commit a foul and we're not in the bonus yet, if my team were to call timeout, we would have the option to advance the ball. Even though we did dribble or pass it, once the defense has committed a foul or a violation, my team has a new backcourt throw in, we can call timeout and advance the ball. So the rule is pretty liberal in the fact that you know, the defense can't benefit from committing a foul or a violation and preventing their opponent from calling timeout and advancing the ball.
That was actually one of the other questions we had asking them about some clarification regarding whether there was a cap on the number of times you could advance the ball or if there was a limit on how many times that could be done within that time period.
You can, as however many timeouts you have left in the last 59.9 is how many times you could conceivably exercise the option. The one piece of the rule, though, that I do want to share, because I'm sure that there are people on the call who will be listening to it later who watch the WNBA. WNBA has a rule that if you don't have the option available to you, whether you passed or you passed the ball or you dribbled the ball, that you could call two timeouts in a row to get the option back. And that is not in our rule. So if I dribble the ball and my coach calls a timeout, my coach can't call another timeout right away to get the option back. Once it's been lost, it's lost. Now, if I secure if Clark, you score and I'm your opponent and I have the ball out of bounds and my coach calls timeout, but chooses not to use the option, and now we come out of that timeout and I can't throw the ball in, we can call another timeout and then exercise the option to advance the ball because we never lost it. We never completed a throw in from out of bounds. We never dribbled inbounds or passed inbounds. So if you call a timeout when you have the option and you choose not to use it and you come back, so long as you don't complete a throw in, you can call timeout and change your mind in that case. But if I call timeout when the option's not available to me, there's no number of timeouts that I could call back to back to back to get the option back.
We have one final question for John, and then we're going to move on with our agenda. For schools that are hosting NAIA opponents this season, are the NAIA schools adopting the new four-quarter system as well?
I don't know what NAIA is doing. That would be something that for NCAA institutions, under NCAA rules, non-conference game, it's usually the rules that are in play for the host institution would be what would go into effect. But I would suggest reaching out to, the NAIA opponent to find out what their governing body has decided to do.
Okay. Any other questions that are being posed for John? We'll circle back to those if we have time.
Right now, we would like to move on. Thank you very much, John. Our next presenter is Amanda Benzine, who is the coordinator of championships and alliances for the NCAA. She'll be shedding some light on the changes taking effect this season regarding game operations. Amanda?
Thank you very much. And yeah, I'm just going to take a few minutes to talk about game presentation. One of my responsibilities here at the NCAA is game presentation for the women's Final Four. And, you know, before I get started, I know that some of you may think that this doesn't relate directly to you because there's other people in your athletics department that handle it, but I do think that you'll find this information pretty useful. So basically what I want to go over is what do the rule changes mean for our game presentation? And one thing that it adds is a unique game format. Like John had mentioned, the media timeouts, there's the one media timeout per quarter, which means that this is much different when it comes to game presentation and that people who are responsible for on-court activations or in-game presentations need to be ready to implement those activations at all times. As you all know, previously we were able to wait until the under 16 or the under 12 or the under 8 or what have you. But now, like John mentioned, if a team calls, there's a team called timeout 30 seconds into the first quarter, that becomes the media timeout, and that's when your activation would be. So that's a unique game format that it changes a little bit for in-venue presentation. Another thing is the quarter breaks are different than the old format. It's going to be, you know, the quarter breaks will be easier when it comes to game presentation as far as preparing things and recognitions on the court, because you'll just have more time to do that. You know when those quarter breaks are going to take place. Additionally, these quarter breaks are also a great opportunity to start some possible in-game traditions since we have those. You know, in the past, again, we just had the four media timeouts, but now with these longer quarter breaks, that is a great opportunity for some traditions to be started. And also, you know, this new format really differentiates the collegiate women's game from the men's game. And I know that some challenges that have been presented with this have come up for those institutions that host doubleheaders with men's and women's basketball at the same time. But really, I think that this new format will make it seem like it's two completely different events instead of two games running together. And it really, I think, will give the women's game, give us an opportunity to switch things up a little bit and for fans, for sponsors, and for everyone involved. In addition to the rule changes regarding making a unique game format, it also gives us some other new opportunities. One thing is a possible longer media timeouts, and I say possible because you do have to check with your conference rules regarding how long your media timeouts are going to be, or whatever your agreement is with your conference or your broadcast. When it comes to the NCAA, our media timeouts and quarter breaks are going to be 2:45, so these are quite a bit lengthier than they have in the past. And this will allow for more activations, which is kind of nice. In the past, a lot of people would have maybe needed to move activations to halftime, which is fine, but then you may not have time for in-game entertainment or to bring in entertainment acts because you have to get in different sponsor activations. Now these longer breaks in-game will allow more sponsor activations or other activations that you have to get in during the game, so then that will allow for more entertainment at halftime. Another thing that I did want to touch on as far as new opportunities are the dead balls. Again, John touched on how music can be played when there's a dead ball from the band or it can be amplified. And I don't know if he mentioned this or not, but it is a hard stop, not a fade. So if you are playing music, just keep that in mind. Or if you're the one that's responsible for playing music, keep that in mind that it is a hard stop once the ball is back in play, not a fade. And, you know, this is a great opportunity for entertaining fans, but whoever is responsible for playing this music is obviously going to have to be paying attention at all moments because dead balls can happen at any time, and then obviously the ball can be back in play very quickly. But again, it's another opportunity to create some new traditions for women's basketball. And I think that, you know, there's going to be some trial and error this season when it comes to this. But I'm hoping that a year from now that we'll be able to share best practices and everyone will be able to learn from each other throughout the year and what works best with that. And you know, some other keys to game presentation if this is something that, that falls onto your plate. I think one big thing is communication, and I think that it's really, really important to communicate early and often with your various stakeholders, whether that be your coaching staff, your sponsors, the media, fans. I know I'm sure a lot of you have thought about this already and have put out some information regarding these rule changes, but I think it's important to keep educating them because change can be difficult for people, and it's, new things can be scary for some people, and so I think that the more we educate people, the better that it will be. And just to remain very positive, I think that these new changes are going to be great for women's basketball. I think it gives us the opportunity, again, to differentiate ourselves from the men's game. And so I think they just remembered me to reiterate that. And I think one way that you guys can kind of get up to make sure that you have the experience going into the regular season when it comes to these new rules is to really talk with your coaching staffs regarding mock games and scrimmages and exhibition games. I think that with this new format, it'll be really important to do a few dry runs with your team and with your coaching staff to make sure that everybody's on the same page. Even though the rules allow you to play music in dead ball situations, your coaching staff may not necessarily remember that, or maybe may not even be in favor of it. And so I feel like it's really important that you have those conversations with everyone, not just the fans, not just the sponsors, but also make sure that you remember to talk to your coaching staff as well. And, you know, be open-minded. I know that there are different challenges that everyone who works in game presentation and otherwise are going to face when it comes to this new format. It's very different, but I think that, again, that it allows a lot of great opportunities from a women's basketball perspective. And I think that there's some really cool things that are going to come out of this year. And lastly, I know that some people have been interested, I have some sample scripts and rundowns from the WNBA, because obviously they currently do use a four-quarter system. And so if there is anybody who handles your scripting, your PA scripting, or your run of show for your women's basketball games, feel free to please reach out to me. And I have some great samples that you can go off of if you're kind of lost in how to do the scripting and how to put everything together, or if you're just interested in seeing what that may look like. So please feel free to email me. My contact information is on the COSIDA website, and I can definitely send you some more of that information. And the different things I just talked about here are also available for you to download on the COSIDA website as well.
Thank you very much, Amanda. For everyone's information, we have received some clarification that the NAIA is adopting the four-quarter format for women's basketball this season. Amanda, we've had a question come in on the Cover It Live blog that I'd like to check with you on. Is there anything created in terms of a program insert that institutions might use to explain the rule changes to fans? A lot of institutions play a lot of doubleheaders, and there may be some confusion why one game is played in one manner and one game is played in the other. Is there anything currently readily available for that?
I don't have anything currently, but I do know a number of institutions that have talked about doing this. And so I'm definitely willing to, I can talk with some of those people and see if I can get a sample of what some other schools have done. And I can also talk here with our staff to see if there's anything that we have put together that maybe that can be repurposed into a program insert or a one pager with that information.
That sounds great. Thank you very much. JD Hamilton, do we have you on the call?
He said he was on. He sent me an email.
Okay. Well, at this time, we'll move on to discussing media coordination and statistics. We have Phil Pierce here on the call to discuss how impending rule changes will affect the tracking of statistics. Phil, would you like to get started?
Sure. JD, feel free to jump in whenever you get on. But from a men's and women's basketball standpoint, really not a whole lot is going to change in terms of how you guys report, how COSIDA members will report to us. You'll still upload your XML files after every game. We'll still take those files and put the stats out on a daily basis for Division I, and then it'll be on a weekly basis through the Christmas holiday and twice a week after the Christmas holiday for Division II and Division III. for the RPIs for Division One men's and women's basketball. We'll be starting those right after the Thanksgiving holiday. So be on the lookout for those. That's you know, same like we did last year. So no changes there. On the email or on the page that has all the other information, there are links to PDFs of the men's and women's scorebook, the new women's scorebook with the four quarters. So be sure to either download that or click on the link to purchase your men's and women's scorebook for the year. You can do that as well. Those links are also available. So those are kind of some of the things. I also wanted to mention that as a reminder, deadlines for your women's basketball and men's basketball schedules are this Friday, tomorrow. So if you could please get those schedules imported and put in so that we can then go ahead and match all those up and get ready for the season. And, you know, just going forward, we're going to try and maybe for the women's side, try to update the record book with some quarter records after this year. We're going to have to take a look and see what kind of statistics are provided us through the XMLs that we get, but hopefully we'll be able to get some really good statistics out of that to include in our record books going forward. So if JD's on and wants to jump in and add anything.
JD, you may need to hit *2 to unmute your line there so you can speak with us. JD, are you there? Okay, well, then in that case, then I think we'll move forward. Phil, thank you very much. We do have some additional questions that have come through on the Cover It Live blog. For John Levinson. John, we had questions about starters reporting for in the in-between quarter breaks. Do starters have to report for each quarter or just each half?
Great question. If there's a substitution that's going to occur at halftime, the substitute has to report before the final horn that ends the halftime intermission. But the intermission that follows the first and third period, the substitute has to report to the scorer before the warning horn that ends the intermission. So if no substitutes report at the end of the first period, if they don't report by the warning horn, then the five players who are on the court at the end of the first period have to start the second period.
We've also had several questions regarding the media timeouts. If you could just clarify how the floating media timeout will work. You know, if the first team timeout in the third quarter becomes the floating media timeout, if there's a second team timeout before the 5-minute mark of the third period, does that become the third quarter media timeout?
It does.
Okay. We did have a question come in regarding media timeouts for the men's game. Perhaps you can help us clarify that. The men's basketball game with television is in the second half. The clock is at 4:10, and all the team has left is a 60-second timeout and calls it. Does that automatically become a media timeout, or do you wait until you either have the next dead ball or the opponent to call its 30-second timeout?
Now, one of the men's rule changes is a rule that the women have had for the last 2 years. In a men's game, if a team calls a timeout within 30 seconds of the media window. So in the play that you just presented, there's 4:10 on the clock and in first half, second half, doesn't really matter. If a team calls timeout with 4:10 on the clock, timeout is charged to the team regardless of whether it's a 30 or a 60, and that becomes the 4-minute media timeout.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for that. And thanks to everyone who's been submitting your questions via the Cover It Live blog or via email. I believe, JD, do we have you on the call? JD Hamilton?
Yeah. Yeah, hi, Clark. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Sorry about that. I have no clue what happened. I just want to let everybody know that a rebound will be a rebound this year, and a steal will be a steal. There's no changes and no stats, I promise you. Rest of the game, a lot of the games change, but the stats will stay the same. 2 points is still 2 points.
Okay, and we have one more final question regarding the number of media timeouts available for the men's and women's games. Could that be clarified, the number of timeouts available to teams for non-media timeout games for both the men's and women?
So in a women's game that's using media timeouts, there are 7 media timeouts, 1 in each period. The intermission following the first and third period may be used as a media timeout, and then the first team call timeout in the second half becomes a media timeout. So those are the 7. And then teams will have four timeouts of their own, 3:30s and one full timeout, which is 60 seconds in length. There's been no change in terms of the number of media timeouts that men have, that they will have media timeouts, the first dead ball below 16 minutes, 12 minutes, 8 minutes, and 4 minutes in each half. The first team call timeout in the second half goes to media, so the men will have, you know, can have 9 media timeouts. I am not familiar with how many team timeouts they get in a media game. I know the men made a change, and I believe I believe it's on their rule change sheet. I'm just not familiar with the number of timeouts that their teams will have, but there'll be 9 with the floater. There are 9 media timeouts in a men's game, and there are 7 media timeouts in a women's game.
Thank you, John. And for women's games that do not feature media timeouts, what is the timeout situation for the teams?
In a non-media game, teams receive 3 30-second timeouts and 2 60-second timeouts. 4 of the 5 timeouts carry over to the second half. If a team does not call timeout in the first half, they will lose one of their 30s. If a team calls any timeout in the first half, whether it's a 30 or a full, they will carry all of their remaining timeouts to the second half.
Okay. Well, John, thank you very much for all your help. We'd like to thank all of our presenters once again for participating in today's call. We continue to appreciate Capital One's sponsorship of this year's Continuing Education Series. The Cover It Live blog, audio, and ASAP Sports Fast Script from today's call will be available for on-demand use at CoastCited.com later today. Our next call will be on Thursday, November 12th, when we will introduce CoastCited's consultant for mental health and wellness, Lisa Strohmeyer. We encourage everyone to read the letter Lisa has written to the membership, which is available online at CoastCited.com. We'll be taking questions for Lisa ahead of time for this call in order to ensure confidentiality. More information will be available on how to do that soon. Thanks to everyone for participating. Have a great day.